It is a Bob McCallum podcast, and I am the aforementioned, and that is John Shannon over there.
Waiting for my name in the title at some point.
Yeah, keep waiting.
Okay.
And with us, the commissioner of the Canadian Football League, Randy Ambrosi, is with us. Well, I wish it was under better circumstances that we were chatting with you, but the news that you've revealed over the last couple of days has not exactly been positive, and I'm sure you're trying to recover from it. I don't want to really start at the beginning, but where are you now? There's the season has been canceled. There doesn't seem to be any way to revive it. Is there, Randy?
No, I don't think so. You know, we've we took a lot of time and stretched our decision timetable to give us every opportunity to, you know, have something work that we could make work, and it didn't. But no, listen, at this point, we'll put the 2020 season behind us and start focusing on the future.
And so the question is, why didn't it work?
Well, first of all, very complicated when, you know, you both know our business model depends much more so than most other pro sports. It relies on bums in the seats. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with that just simply not being possible in this COVID environment, the revenue model just, you know, didn't work. So then we look at, you know, going into a bubble, and, you know, that's got its own challenges. Very, very expensive to go into a bubble to, you know, to do it right. And we started a conversation, which actually in part was, I guess, really in large part was started by the government. And they asked how they could help. They asked if there was a way to get us back on the field and what would it take. And we gave them a proposal and, frankly, really positive discussions. Went quiet for a little bit, and then they came back and they were even more energized around getting us back on the field. And we were in a very, very active discussion until about Wednesday evening last week, and then it got quiet. And then Friday night at 7:30, we got on a call, and they revealed they weren't going to provide the support. So, you know, disappointing outcome. To make it work, we did need some government support. You know, as you know, the discussion was around a loan that would help kind of bridge us from where we were to where we needed to be, and it just didn't happen.
Well, let's talk about the specifics, because I want you to clarify the reported numbers. Randy, they said that the loan request was at $30 million with a repayable interest plan. Are those numbers accurate?
It's actually the number we were talking about in the very latest stages was actually just a little bit north of $28 million.
Okay. And there was an interest bearing proponent to that, right?
There was, in that particular discussion, there were no specifics on exactly what the format the funding would come in. And that's what we thought we would be getting into, was a term sheet that would, you know, frankly, that's what we thought would come next, would be a term sheet for, you know, that we would take to our governors. But the term sheet, never arrived. So quite honestly, Bob, I can't say exactly what it would have looked like, because we never saw a term sheet.
Did you feel like this was a loan that this league would be able to repay?
Yeah, under the right terms, sure. In fact, we say that repeatedly right through from beginning to end, that, you know, we had no problem being accountable to the Canadian government and to the taxpayers. But, you know, some of the loans that we were showing through the EDC, BDC programs are relatively short term, you know, kind of get one program in particular, 4 years, and it maxed out at an 8% interest rate with another 1.5% fee. So 9.5% payable in 4 years time just wasn't going to work for us. But we said if we could get a longer term loan, and we could, at reasonable rates, then sure, we were prepared to take that to the governors, because that was something we could manage, and it would have got us through the crisis.
And were all the governors on board, Randy?
You know what? Look, it's anyone who's been around sports for any length of time knows that boards of governors, given that they're all remarkably successful people, have lots of different views, and our league is no different. But I really believe in the end we would have worked it out, that it would have been something, you know, to ask them to support something when you can't bring them a term sheet. And then for me to say they all were on board would be would be improper. Mm-hmm. But had I taken to them a term sheet that was reasonable, then under that scenario, I think we would have got it done.
So I guess my point is that they were all supportive of you going to the government and working a deal out with the government.
Oh, very much so, yes.
Were there alternatives discussed, or were there any alternatives even to contemplate?
Well, Bob, again, we talked about a lot of things, and there were so many reasons during that kind of 2-month stretch that, because again, we were invited onto a call with Stephen Guilbeault, who's the Minister of Heritage and Sports, and all of the sports ministers. And that night, I was invited to join them at the invitation of Minister Guilbeault. And I would say we left very, very excited. We talked about a lot of things during that time. And sure, I think there were options. But again, you know, to say we just never got to here's what we're formally proposing. When they showed us programs, we would review the programs and, you know, tell them what would or wouldn't work. We kind of dismissed several things along the way. But Bob, the answer is we thought they could show us something that our governors would be able to live with and would get us on the field and into 21.
You know, in every other sports league, it almost appears, and I know they say this, but the partnership between the league and the players is so vitally important for something like this. We're seeing it in hockey. We're seeing it with basketball. We've seen the other side a little bit with baseball, and we're still not sure what's going on with the NFL. Where were you and your players?
Well, you know, we certainly had a couple of tough moments during the process. You know, going back to March, we went to, you know, frankly, it was scaring the living hell out of us. You know, those early 3, 4, 5 weeks of the COVID virus, and we started looking at, wow, can we even have a season, and what effect would this have on the league? And look, if I could go back, I would have taken a deep breath and sat down with the PA and talked about it. But what we thought timing was more important at the time. And again, I wish we would have done that differently. But I'd say the last couple of months have been really good. And we've been working really well with the players. We were very close to a deal, a collective bargaining deal to get us back on the field. And you know, almost all the details had been worked out and the conversations were positive and constructive. So if you know, anyone who knows collective bargaining knows you can love the other side, but collective bargaining by its nature is fraught with some conflict. But I really felt like we came around a long way. And I spoke to Solomon Eliminian on Sunday, and I said we talked a lot about setting the tone from the top. Now that to really talk about Solomon and I setting a really positive tone for our long-term relationship, and John, I think that's where we are. I think we have got resolve to really work together to take the league, you know, out of the crisis and into the future.
So you, I mean, just to clarify that, you do need a new CBA with your players for next season anyway, so you're going to start at ground zero again?
Well, we actually have a CBA for 21.
Okay.
Our CBA expires at the end of next year, but we've talked about sitting down and looking at a new type of CBA, and one where what I really want to do is I want to bring the players into our business. I want the players to be part of our revenue growth strategy. I want them to benefit from our future initiatives. And so we're talking about how do we create a strategic collective bargaining agreement, one where it's not just how much we're going to pay them, but how do we work better together and how do we create a future together? So we both care about the same things, and fans in the stands, you know, strong TV revenue, strong sponsorship revenue, and where all of it, you know, all of the stakeholders get the benefit. That's what we're talking about doing together.
And bring back the 5-year import rule that allows that guy to be a non-import, Randy.
Well, in fact, John, interestingly enough, this is one of the things that I've talked to Solomon and Brian Ramsey about. rather than us going into a collective bargaining and telling them what the solution to getting more stability on our rosters, actually say to them, how do we do it? And let's put a whole bunch of ideas on the table together, and work together at the idea of how to create stability on our rosters, because I think they agree that one of our problems has been too much roster turnover. But rather than us dictating how to solve that problem, I'd like to work at that with the players and entertain all good ideas.
If you had your druthers, would Canadian football players be protected?
Well, look, the Canadian part of the Canadian Football League has been so important for so long. And I do think we have to have our Canadian ratio in place.
Let me stop you. Why do you think that is important? Because I think that is an obvious response to an historic situation that speaks to an era and a generation that I am certainly old enough to recall, when guys like Stillwagon and Corrigal and Theismann and top draft choices from the National Football League would come to Canada because, Randy, they could make more money here than they could there. But those days are long gone, and I'm not proposing that I have the answers here, but I'm intrigued by, why are we protecting Canadian football players? Are we in peril of having college football, university football in Canada disappear if there's no place for them to go? There still would be. They just wouldn't have guaranteed jobs. So speak to that, if you will.
Yeah. Well, look, Bob, I don't know. I don't have all the answers to your question, but I'll give you things that I think about and based on my own observations. So one of the differences between U.S. football players and Canadian players is the U.S. players have typically played longer. They typically start their football experience, you know, at 7, 8, 9 years old. And by the time they get to college, they played a lot of football. A lot of Canadian football players don't start until, you know, they're 12 or 13 or maybe even 14 or 15. They come later to the game.
They start in high school, many of them, Randy.
Yeah, and so we don't have those years of development. But you know, look, some examples of what I've seen. So you take a guy like my teammate Rod Conop. You know, Rod Conop, I think Rod played high school football, then went to Laurier. He got drafted by the Eskimos 2 or 3 years later, and Rod goes on to a Hall of Fame career. Hall of Fame. Like, Rod Conop was one of the best players I've ever saw in the game. Dan Ferroni, same thing. We do take a little longer to develop, and the ratio actually creates an environment where our guys that don't have that experience from, you know, grade 3 or 4, they actually take a little longer to develop. But boy, when they get good, they get good for a long time. And Bob, that's one of the reasons why I think there has to be a ratio, because we got to give our guys a chance to get developmental time. Because when they get Pierre Vercheval, one of my dearest friends, Pierre, was not a starter when he came into the CFL, but went on to a Hall of Fame career. And one of the best offensive linemen in this league's history. It takes a little longer, but boy, the outcome is worth every day of waiting.
All right, actually, all you'd have to do is mention every guy on that Eskimo line, Randy, that you talk about. And you know what, Bob? I totally disagree with you. I think it's really important for the Canadians to play the Canadian game, because if they didn't, what would happen is all those head coaches, all those general managers would have a weekly airlift of American football players, and we would lose total identity with the athletes in the league. I think one of the key reasons of keeping the CFL Canadian is because Canadian players stay here and live here, and we can identify with them.
I don't think fans care what where they're from, what color they are, they care what uniforms they wear. I think they're looking for the best quality of football. I'm not going to argue the point. It's just, it's been kind of this given that Canadians must be protected. We here in Canada must protect our own. but it's the only league that has this kind of thing. You know, for decades and decades, the National Hockey League had almost exclusively Canadian players in it. And then all of a sudden there were dribs and drabs of American players in it. And then all of a sudden came the European influence.
That's different, Bob. That's different.
How is it different?
Well, first of all, as of right now, there are no teams in the United States in the Canadian Football League. This is a Canadian, this is a made in Canada league for Canadians to play and Canadians
John,
to enjoy.
When there's six-team NHL, four of the teams were in the U.S., and the players were 99.9% Canadian.
It was a regional sport.
And you didn't hear Americans bitching and complaining about that. Look,
Randy, help me here. Come on, I'm fighting for your league.
Well, I'm enjoying this a lot, man.
I mean, I'm not trying to take jobs away from Canadian kids.
Sure you are.
Let's talk about it from an economic standpoint. Mr. Commissioner, do Canadian players, par for par, position for position, make more money than American players?
Well, again, Bob, you can't really answer the question simply because, you know, the majority, all of our quarterbacks are Americans. And
let's take the quarterbacks out of the equation.
Oh, okay. Now you hold on.
Well, it's a league where Canadian quarterbacks don't get an opportunity. And I don't think any of us.
And they should. They should.
Nobody is going to argue that point. And I support it. But Canadian kids, and principally because of what the commissioner said earlier, they don't have the breadth and length of experience at a highly skilled position.
Nobody
wants to give them a chance.
Or I'll tell you what, those darn American coaches that come up here and coach the game have no patience to teach our Canadians.
Well,
that's all part of it too.
Let me say this. If I would never, ever want to have a CFL without Rod Conop, Dan Ferroni, and Pierre Vercheval. Those guys were not only some of the greatest players of their time, but the contributions they made to their communities are beyond description. That to me, I believe that system has helped to generate some of the best athletes ever to play the game of football on both sides of the border, and I wouldn't want to give that away. But John, you started with a different question. I do think that allowing players that come and commit and stay, and I think of Angela Mosca, who played under that scenario. He was ultimately played as a Canadian. Ange Mosca, who may go down as one of the best players ever to play the game of football, again, both sides of the border, he adopted this country, and it was really nice to see him play as a Canadian.
Your favorite coach, Randy. Ronnie Lancaster did the same thing under the five-year rule. But in the end, what happened was that those guys contributed to their community.
Sure, they did.
Became involved in the community,
yeah.
And that's the difference with what you know. I mean, we could. I know we're all old, but that's the difference with what the Canadian Football League can do for every city that it's in.
Absolutely.
And,
so, John,
that's part of this.
Absolutely. One important. Visual. I'm in Calgary last year for Grey Cup, and every year one of our traditions is a bunch of the players go to the Children's Hospital. And I'm telling you something, you go watch that and you see a bunch of, you know, a couple of 330-pound linemen who are on the floor in a recreation room with some of these kids who are suffering terrible maladies. And these players are not looking at their watch. They're not trying to figure out how they can leave. They're not waiting for a limo to take them to their next thing. They're in that hospital, and they're totally immersed in that experience with that child. And for 35 minutes or an hour, that child is no longer sick, and they're no longer suffering. They're just being loved by a really big, really big guy who's loving them back. And I'm telling you, when you see that, you'll understand the value of this league. It is not just about football. It is about what we've meant to the communities that we play in.
We have to encourage, and this is what we have to do, you do, I don't, but we have to encourage the Americans who come and play here to want to live here. That's what we have to do. And I don't know how we do that.
interestingly enough, we may be sitting at that moment in time where we have the perfect environment to welcome these players who come here to come and stay. Look, we're not a perfect country. We aren't, but we're pretty good. And there's a lot of things going on in this country that can be very attractive to athletes to come and not only come and play football, but come and stay. And we need to promote, we absolutely need to make every player, whether they're from the US or anywhere around the world, we need to let them know that we would love them to come and be part of this great country of ours.
Okay, so that's good. The vote's 2-1. Canadians stay in the league. That's good. Hey, where what's going on in Halifax?
Well, you know what? Just talked to the Schooner Sports and Entertainment this morning. Obviously, Premier McNeil announced his retirement. So, you know, we've got some work to do. You know, we'll see what they decide to do as a party. But Stephen McNeil was a huge supporter. You know, what I've said to Schooner Sports and Entertainment this morning is we got to really get our business model, in light of what's just happened to us. We got to get our business model defined, and then we got to take that business model and show it to Schooner Sports and Entertainment, get them excited about it. And then we need to go back out east. We got to go to Halifax Regional Council. We got to go to the province. And then maybe we got to go to the feds as well and talk to them about building a facility in Atlantic Canada that can be a legacy and create an opportunity for Atlantic Canadians to attract not just a CFL team, but all kinds of events that can make that region bigger and stronger.
So no date, no timeline anymore?
Well, it will now, we will set a new date, but we got to reset our business model. And I've asked them for a little bit of time to do that. And then we'll build a new timetable after that.
In your mind, what is the blueprint look like for a new stadium on the East Coast? Is there one that exists now that you'd say, I want, you know, this is what it should look like? Ottawa?
Bob, it's a really good question. And I think more and more we're learning. I think that the era, and look at the environment we're in today, but I think the era of the supersized stadiums is not where you go. Look at this generation, the Gen X and the Gen Ys, they don't like to sit, they like to stand. I think a stadium is somewhere between 23 and 25,000 seats. I think it's got lots of standing room. I think it's got high top tables. I think it's got lots of social area. This generation, who are fantastic, they're smart and they're energized, are not as inclined to the experience that, say, the three of us might have had, where you go to the stadium, walk down the stairs, grab a beer, grab a hot dog, and watch sports. They're far more social. So there is a great blueprint for a stadium, and it involves open areas. Look at Tim Hortons in Hamilton, how much success they've had there, and you got to have a social atmosphere. Because they're not just going for sports, they're going for the social aspect as well.
Bob's only going into the private box, Randy, just for the record.
Well, yeah, probably, but I cannot deny the truth. How much do you think this experience that you've just gone through will impact this league? Now, I was going to say long-term, but I think there's a short-term potential hit here. I don't know whether it's real, but how much do you think it might hurt your league?
Well, it is hurting us. You know, not playing and not having our players playing this year is hurting us for sure, Bob. And, you know, again, I know there is, you know, this will create a disruption, but it can also create an opportunity. If we use this time intelligently. You know, the problem we all have, and you hear this in business all the time, you're so busy working in the business, you don't get to work on it. So for the first time in a long time, we get to work on our business now. We get to work on our business model. We get to revisit all of our strategies and our systems. We get to figure out how to run our business more efficiently. We can take the time to look at our communities and build strategies to penetrate our communities. Look, Toronto has got thousands of schools and obviously hundreds of thousands of school children. How do we get in front of all of them? How do we tell the CFL story to new Canadians? and welcome them into the CFL family, attract them to our game. Those are all things. So it is without a doubt, it is going to hurt us in the short term, but it can be very helpful to us in the long term.
What about your sponsors? I mean, I'm sure you're going to say that they're all on board and they're all going to stick with you, and I'm sure you've talked to all of them, but is there any risk there, do you feel?
Well, there's always risk because, you know, sponsors are in business and they'll have choices to make. Look, one of the things we'll do is we'll work hard. Look, it's one of the things I love about this league. There's a lot of sweat and effort that goes into every day, and we'll work really hard. Do I think we'll keep 100% of our sponsors? I don't know. But will we work hard to keep 100% of our sponsors? You bet. And that's going to have to be our mantra, is work really hard at setting the stage for a better, stronger league by working on our business for the next 6 to 7 months.
How concerned are you about teams and staffs? And not just coaches, but like office staff, and you got your own office, and you have the nine teams. Where do you sit with that?
Yeah, I am worried about that. You know, obviously it's hard to keep full employment when you don't have any revenues coming in. So that's going to mean some disruption there. And there are so many wonderful people that work in and around our league. So you're worried about that, but we'll do to the best of our ability. We'll do what's right, and then you know what? When it's when the sun comes out, we'll get back to the business of building our teams again. But no, John, seriously, I worry about that, and it's going to be one of the, you talk about pain, Bob. That's going to be one of the areas of pain that we will suffer.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about your relationship with TSN, your broadcast partner, and probably your largest single economic financial supporter, influencer. How involved were they in all the discussions that you've had over the past few months?
Yeah, we've been talking to them a lot. They have been great. There is no doubt that TSN is a tremendous bright spot for us. And you know, our relationship starting with Stu Johnson and, you know, working through, Paul Graham and really there's just so many, so many great people there that it's been a great part of our league and I expect it to be a great part, but we've been talking with them a lot, keeping them apprised of all the developments. They obviously wanted to see us play and were disappointed that we weren't going to be able to play this year, but I would describe our relationship with them as very positive, and I'm thankful for it.
This is just an aside question. Sorry, John, but
it's okay.
Since we're talking about TSN, and it occurs to me that contracts that have, all contracts have a termination date, but let's say you had, I'm going to hypothesize, 5 years left on the deal with TSN. Does this year count as a year? Does this year count as a year for player contracts and coaching contracts? And does this year count as a year in your relationship with one of your sponsors? Or are all of these situations different?
Well, they will count as a year in our contracts with our players. We're looking at all of those things right now. Look, we were planning on playing.
I understand.
To the best of our ability. And of course, when we didn't announce on Monday that we're not, there's a lot of work being done right now to address all of those questions. But look, we're going to sort it all out. It was a big disappointment. Monday was a big disappointing day. But we have to focus on the future because you can't spend your time wallowing around in your self-pity. You have to get up off the carpet, and you got to get back to work, and that's what we're doing.
Is that you and correct me if I'm wrong, but you had to make all these decisions before Labor Day, correct? There's a key September date in all these contracts.
Well,
correct?
No, not so much a September date, but look, there was a reality that frankly, we all along we were kind of talking August 15th. Pretty much everything had to be decided by August 15th.
Okay.
Because you're just going to run out of runway. We can't have a Grey Cup on December the 15th. So, you got to have an amount of time to have operated. But look, it turned out we made our key decision on August the 17th, not August the 15th, but we were pretty close to what we ultimately expected.
I know you're a very good diplomat. You actually answer questions quite well, but you got to be watching the NFL and wondering what they're going to do and how they're going to do it.
You know, I am. I'm going to be very curious to see how they function. You know, I'm very curious. I think obviously their players are going to go home at the end of the day. You know, they're going to practice and go home, and players will go. Some players will practice and go home, and some players will practice and go out. And you wonder how will they manage all that? That's a very well run organization, and they've got more expertise in that league than maybe any other league has. I know they'll have it all figured out, but obviously I'm watching and hopeful for them that it goes well. But it's a lot of players. It's one of the big differences between basketball and hockey and football is just the size of the rosters. And let's face it, it is a game where you are literally hitting face to face on every play. Like in hockey, you get in each other's face and there are some collisions, but in football, you are literally hitting each other on every single play. So I'm watching. I've been fascinated to watch the NCAA and their decisions over the last 10 days or so. But look, this COVID virus, the big issue, the COVID virus. Look at you two are, you know, you're sitting in your homes, and I'm sitting in mine. Tell me that it just hasn't knocked us all for a loop here. And sports is in a challenging time.
Mr. Commissioner, it was a tough week, but some hard decisions had to be made, and you and your gang made them, and we certainly respect them. There are going to be many thousands of people across this country who will have less to do this fall because the Canadian Football League won't be playing. They probably have already recognized that it's been a couple of months without it. But as you said, we're all kind of in a different world here. So we respect the decisions that you've made, and we look forward to having an opportunity to chat with you down the road when you have some concrete ideas of where you're going next, because I don't think any of us really know the answer to that question quite yet.
Yeah, you're right, Bob. And again, best wishes to both of you, and stay safe, and I'll look forward to catching up again on the other side of this mess.
We thank you for your time, as always, and We'll talk to you down the road. Randy Ambrosi is the commissioner of the Canadian Football League. We'll see you next time on the podcast.